Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Brian Croft to the podcast. Brian serves as senior pastor of Auburndale Baptist Church in Louisville, Kentucky, and is the founder of Practical Shepherding Incorporated. He's also senior fellow for the Mathena Center for Church Revitalization and an adjunct professor at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's the husband of Kara, father of four children, son Samuel, and daughters Abby, Isabel, and Claire. He served in pastoral ministry for 23 years while serving the last 15 of those years as pastor of Auburndale Baptist Church. Brian, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Dr. Allen, good to talk to you.
Yeah, look, this is kind of a blast from the past for me, and as you and I were getting to catch up a minute before we started recording, we pastored together for a number of years there in South Louisville. I was interim pastor for a couple of years and then teaching pastor for a couple of years and then interim pastor again of the same church, yep. Carl Avenue Baptist Church, which now has kind of merged with Sojourn and a new work there, which I'm excited about and excited for. And you were at Auburndale Baptist, just a few miles away, and we got to partner occasionally in ministry endeavors and bump into one another in ministry settings. And so appreciated your ministry then and appreciate it all the more now.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to talk to you and reconnect with you.
And remind me, the church there, you've been there, I believe you said, about 16 years now, 15 years now at Auburndale. And give us just a brief word of update, what the Lord's doing there, and then more broadly from Auburndale through some of these other ministry opportunities you have.
Yeah, so earlier this month, I celebrated 16 years at the church. And the church is going well. For those who know my church story, it was a really rough early year. So three different movements to get me fired in the first 5 years of the church. And
always a blessing.
5 years were, yeah, that's right. They were pretty brutal. But thankfully, the Lord turned the ship around year six, and the church moved in a different direction. And we started just bearing fruit from a lot of the hard work of the early years. And so, yeah, so 16 years in, the church is doing well. It's healthy. It's unified. People, you know, love to hear the word. People love each other and sacrifice for one another. We're, you know, the south end of Louisville is a really dense urban area with a lot of needs. And so we're actually getting out in our community and trying to reach people with the gospel, probably better than maybe we ever have there since I've been there. We have strong leaders, pastors and deacons that are, you know, qualified and serving in their roles. Well, probably one of the biggest legacies of the church that's really encouraging 16 years later is we have raised up and trained and sent out probably about 35 former members who are either on the mission field serving as missionaries or in pastoral ministry. So that's an exciting legacy of the church at this point.
Good for you. And your faithfulness there has been an encouragement to so many of us. And I was around in proximity for some of those early years, and you continue to serve there and labor and till ground that is not always the most fertile or doesn't appear to always be the most fertile. To see that bear fruit for you over the years is just an encouragement to many of us. And more broadly, you mentioned practical shepherding and other things you're doing. In particular, tell us about that and how that started and what the Lord did in you and through you in beginning that ministry.
Yeah, so practical shepherding really started out of my local church ministry there at Auburndale. As I'm pastoring this church and trying to revitalize a struggling church, I just had a heart to want to mentor young men who feel called into the ministry. Some of them started coming, and I started just pouring into them, and it just training them in the practicalities of ministry. Being close to a great seminary is wonderful, and they're getting great theological education, but I knew they needed to learn the practicalities of ministry in the church. And so I'm dragging them to the hospitals, I'm taking them to the widow's homes, and the funeral homes, and teaching them about regular practical ministry. And that just kind of came out of my heart and what I wanted to do to see training and other men in those particular areas. It also exposed a gaping hole of need for resources. So we started developing some resources out of those simple things like visiting the sick and caring for widows and funerals. And it just kind of blew up. You know, this is 10 years ago when the internet was really changing book publishing and how it all functioned. And so our resources were able to get out there and spread. And that's really what started practical shepherding. And then we saw needs all around the world of the same kinds of things that were needed. And so it's been going about 10 years and it has, we've just seen a ton of fruit, from this. It's turned into a ministry of caring for pastors, not just training them, but trying to care for them when they're struggling and dealing with the hard difficulties of ministry.
And one last kind of ministry question before we move into the topic of conversation today, but you've been productive writing. You've written a lot in recent years, and I don't want to rehearse all that, what you've done, but just for my curiosity and that of your listeners, what's around the corner? What have you written that will be coming out, or what are you writing now or planning to write in the near future?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I had two books that just came out in the last 2 months that have been writing projects for the last year. One is called Facing Snarls and Scowls, which is a book about preaching in church revival in the context of the adversity and even the hostility of church revitalization. And then this month, there's another book coming out that's called Being a Pastor. And it's a book that I wrote with Michael Haken from Southern Seminary. And it's basically taking the 31 ordination sermons that Andrew Fuller, English Baptist from the 19th century, that he preached in his ministry at different places. We took those 31 sermons, republished them. Dr. Haken did commentary on them. And then I wrote modern day pastoral applications out of them. And so that's just came out this month, and we're really excited about that. So those are the two we're working on. And actually, Dr. Haken and I are talking about doing a book on pastoral friendship in the future.
Good for you. Well, listen, let's talk today about preaching through adversity. And you have written about this, you've spoken about this, you have lived this. And look, every pastor listening to this podcast no doubt has brushed up against this phenomenon, at least on occasion, preaching through adversity, mm-hmm. whether that's personal adversity, a dark night of the soul, whether that's congregational adversity, a hostile segment of the church, or perhaps a large percentage of the church adversarial in disposition towards the pastor. And so preaching through adversity, everyone needs to be encouraged about having to face this, either as they are in it or have been in it or will be going through it. So I guess we need to begin by you giving us your story. You alluded to it earlier about those three near-death attempts you had as pastor, but flesh that out a touch as to what you experienced and therefore how that shaped your heart for pastors going through hardship.
Yeah, so the hostile environment that I walked into, there were three different movements to get me fired. One happened at 3 months in, so whatever the honeymoon period is people talk about, I didn't experience that. It was kind of came right off the bat. And the next one was at 2.5 years, and then the third one's at year 5, and that almost just completely imploded the church. And so a lot of it had to do with, you know, authority, you know, who's in charge in the church. You know, I walked into a church that had about 3 or 4 families that kind of held a family regime on the church, just a stranglehold on the church for 3 or 4 decades. It's a large reason why the church had declined for, you know, 30 or 40 years. And so that's what I walked into. And I'm finding, as I work with a lot of pastors who go into these situations, you go into them and you try to find the balance of trying to love these people and care for them and try to win them. Or sometimes you have to, you know, you have to take them on. You have to fight against your adversaries. And so that was really hard. There were concerns for my physical safety at times because things got so bad. So those 5 years were rough, and in the context of preaching in that environment is really hard because you pour your heart out trying to preach, and when you're literally preaching to scowls, it makes it really tough to continue to do that week in and week out. That's one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. If I knew that's what I was going to face in going to the church, I wouldn't have gone. I mean, God in his providence kind of kept me from knowing that, but that was one of the hardest things I've ever had to try to face.
And, you know, obviously you've written about this. The name of your book, I believe, is Preaching Through Adversity. Is that right?
Yeah, well, the name of the book is Facing Snarls and Scowls.
That's right. Okay, excuse me. Facing Snarls and Scowls. But the same theme, the issue behind it. And so the book, which I now have at hand here, and I did look through, I just didn't have the title before me. the book itself, I guess, what is the premise of the book? What is the main argument you're trying to make?
Yeah, so I try to make a strong argument in regard to especially church revitalization, churches that are dying or declining and in trouble, that the Word of God is what builds the church. It's what breathes life into the church. You know, it's not gimmicks. It's not pragmatism. It's the Word that breathes life into deadness and darkness. And so if that's true, which is my strong philosophy of pastoral ministry, then the preaching ministry is so essential in these environments. So the book is arguing that, okay, preaching has to be one of the main focus of a pastor's ministry when he goes into a church. And he's got to preach the Word faithfully. I'm an advocate of expository preaching, you know, through books of the Bible, and that you have to go in and persevere and endure whatever you're facing to be able to, you know, to allow time for the Word to do the work. So something I often say is that just because the Word of God is powerful doesn't mean that it acts quickly. And so I think the parable of the sower in Mark chapter 4, Jesus teaches us how the Word works. That, you know, the seed is sown, it's got to find good soil first. And when it finds that soil, it still has to take root and grow and sprout out of the ground and grow some more. And then the fruit comes. What I find is that when the average stay of a pastor is about 3 years still, pastors don't stay long enough, preach long enough for the Word to do the work and eventually see the fruit. So the book is advocating for one, that preaching, that the Word of God is what builds the church, which, and we have to stay long enough for the Word to do the work and to see the fruit come.
Yeah, you talk in your book about Neil Postman, and who famously wrote Amusing Ourselves to Death, was a cultural observer, cultural critic, in particular the damages of entertainment on modern civility, modern attention spans, modern capacity to think and reason and dialogue. And look, we're up against that in the church, and you have a generation or two of church members very often who they just have been, like, the most substantive thing they thought about all week was a sitcom. And you're right, trying to preach to that. And it's a counterintuitive phenomenon for them to listen, if you'd expect them to listen, to be still, to receive a 40, 45-minute, maybe longer sermon that's exegetical, that's expositional. In the history, mm-hmm. of the, in the history of the church, in the history of Reformed and Protestant Christianity, that wasn't, you know, a grand anomaly, but in 21st century pop evangelicalism, it so often is. How do you mm-hmm. preach through that? How have you preached through that, Brian?
Yeah, so I think the first thing you have to think about is you got to know the context of where you are, and you have to meet people where they are. So one of the things that I think is unhelpful, and James and I address this in the book, you know, what doesn't help this is going in and preaching a bad sermon. So, like, this isn't just on the people that are in the church. This is on the preacher as well, making sure that we preach in a way that's helpful. And so I think we have to know who our people are. If they're expecting if they're used to a 15-minute sermon, and all of a sudden we want to come in and just force preaching a 60-minute sermon on them, that's typically not going to go well for people. So what we advocate for is that, look, you know, the Word does the work. We have to preach, and that's got to be the centerpiece of our ministry. But we got to meet our people, you know, where they are. If you ever take someone who's starving, and you all of a sudden just try to force a bunch of food in them, it's a terrible experience. Like, they can't ingest all that.
Right.
You have to gradually feed them, you know, healthy things, but small amounts, and build it up. And so that's what I would advocate for as guys go into these different situations. You want to push your congregation to grow, but you also want them to be able to receive the food that you're feeding them from the Word. And so every situation is different, but the pastor's got to be skilled and wise to go in and really assess what they can handle.
You know, that's a very good word. And I tell our students here in conversations just like this that you have to be contextually aware of your church or that congregation, what they have been exposed to previously, what they haven't been exposed to previously. What has taken place in the pulpit preceding years and decades. And if the church has been getting year after year 20-minute sermonettes, well, it's asking a lot to ask them to overnight follow you, you know, 40, 45 minutes week in and week out on a, you know, 4-year series through the book of Ezekiel. I mean, that's whiplash. And we're called to drive people, not lead people, not drive them. And right. we also have to be aware of our own gifting. Look, there aren't that many Martin Lloyd-Joneses, John MacArthurs walking around where their gifting is such that people quickly can respond to and embrace and grow from and benefit from sitting under lengthy, healthy, substantive expository sermons. That's not an argument against it. It's an argument for it. It's just a point making that understand if you're 28 and never preached a lengthy series in your life, well, don't like make your congregation one big laboratory for experiments. Be cautious, be humble, be biblical, be aware of who you are and who they are and what God has called you to do there, both in the short term and in the long term.
Right. Well, and one of the things I experienced, so I came into our church, I was 65 years old, and in the 65-year history, the best I could tell, there had never been an expository sermon ever preached in the church. And so as I talked to people, just to understand what they understood preaching was. Well, for them, what they understood preaching was about a 20, 25-minute evangelistic sermon like Billy Graham preached at the Crusades. And that's their understanding of preaching. So I try to bring expository sermons to the table, and they don't have a category for it. So it took years for them to even understand that I wasn't doing a Bible study. I actually was preaching, but in a totally different way than they had understood.
That's good. That's very well said. So let's try to pull a couple of different parts of the conversation together. Expository preaching, which you argue for, help us to understand why that not only is healthy for the church, healthy for the minister, but why that is particularly helpful when you're preaching through adversity. Why is expository preaching as a mode and method of preaching, why is that preferred when you're going through a season of congregational conflict?
Yeah, great question. I would first say, I mean, obviously being a huge advocate for expository preaching, just simply because I think it's the most helpful way to handle the Bible and to teach our people how to read their Bible. So we teach people how to read. So I think that's a big reason. If preaching in a way that shows the author's intent, that preaches through a book, which means we can't dodge any hard passages. I mean, there's just tons of reasons that I would advocate for expository preaching in these environments. But to the other part of your question, how do you do the reason you do it in hostile situations is that in a way it allows the next text to give you what to say. So what happens to a lot of guys who go in a hostile environment and issues and conflict come up, their knee-jerk reaction is to, well, I'm going to preach a passage that addresses these issues going on in the church. And all of a sudden, people feel called out, and it ends up being a mess. I mean, pastors who mean well do this all the time. When you preach expository sermons through books of the Bible, and the next text you got is the next text you work with, it gives at least less opportunity for people to think you're calling me out. You're trying to you're being a bully pulpit, you know, and using it in that way. And so, I have found in a hostile environment, if people don't like what you're saying, there's less of a chance for them to accuse you of having an agenda with it other than just wanting to be faithful to preach through the Bible and not avoid any verses.
That's right. And it prevents you from being accused of congregational whack-a-mole, of just finding a text to whack at people from whatever the issue of the week or the month is. And so that is a part of my argument for expository preaching. It prevents a hobby horse preaching. And what is more, look, make people argue with the Bible, not with you. And I'm not talking about issues of preference or things that are kind of sort of maybe, you know, this is biblical, maybe it's not. But the big issues of church life that churches often fight over that are clearly biblical issues. I mean, preach the text and let carnal people have to argue with God and His Word, not with you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think that's one of the strongest reasons to advocate for expository preaching, you know, in a hostile context, for sure.
So you argue in your book to both preach and stay. And boy, it's tempting to want to stay, especially if the conflict is protracted and it may be hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And you mentioned, if I heard you right, three different near-death experiences, vocationally speaking, in the first 5 years. And what drew you forward to continue to stay, continue to preach, continue to shepherd? What carried you forward?
Yeah, I get asked that a lot. I think the thing that motivated me the most to stay was I was just compelled by Hebrews 13:17, you know, which says that I you know, I will give an account for the souls that God's entrusted to me. And in the heat of the conflicts, God taught me one of the most important lessons I've ever learned in pastoral ministry. And Hebrews 13, 17, that includes the people who don't like me very much. And, you know, if I'm dealing with wolves, that's a different conversation. But what I discovered, even in the midst of all this hostility I was facing, I was dealing with a lot of wounded sheep, pastors that had come and gone and done some great harm to the church. And they were just, they were putting their hostility on me just because of the distrust of the pastoral office. So I think one of the things that compelled me to stay were two things. Number one is I truly believe the word of God breathed life into the church, and that if I stayed long enough and preached it long enough, that God would do that work. The second reason I stayed is because I felt responsible for the souls of these people. And just because they didn't like the way I was preaching or didn't know how to receive the way I was preaching at the time, you know, that didn't exempt me from the responsibility of the souls I'll answer for to Jesus one day.
That's very well put. And Brian, that's probably the most appropriate place to land the plane. The 20 minutes or so has flown by, but it's been a good and healthy and productive 20 minutes. And thank you for sharing your story, both in this conversation and in your book, Facing Snarls and Scowls, Preaching Through Hostility, Apathy, and Adversity in Church Revitalization. Well, Brian, thank you for your work, both through this book, for the conversation today, and for all the Lord is doing through you and your ministry more broadly.
It's great. Thanks for having me. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you for being with us today and for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, go to my website, jasonkallen.com. That's jasonkallen.com.